It's Wells Fargo week, and there's a great field at Quail Hollow, so we break all of that down on this week's episode of Be Right. Plus, we're joined by a special guest, PGA Tour pro Abraham Anser, who we had a great chat with. He's coming off yet another top five finish last week at the Valspar. We asked him whether not earning a win yet on the PGA Tour bothers him. Our guy, Chris Powers, kind of grilled him, but Anser had a very honest response to that, Honest Abe, as we're now calling him. We also talked to him about the famous video, you know, Tiger beating him at the President's Cup, and, you know, the doctored Tiger walking really quick at him. He had an amazing response to that. So listen to the rest of the episode for a great chat with Abe. But first, a special shout out to William Hill for their continued support of our podcast and the gambling content at golfdigest.com, which you definitely need to go check out. Our experts picks column with Pat Mayo, Rick Gaiman, Brandon Gadula, Lee Aldrich of Fanshare Sports, and an anonymous PGA Tour caddy giving their picks each week. But first, check out the juicy sign-up bonus that William Hill is offering, a free bet up to $500, depending on where you live. Use the promo code GolfDigestRF at sign-up. That's for new users only, and you must be 21 or older and physically present in one of William Hill's states to take advantage. The risk-free bet will be credited as a free bet within 3 business days. Terms and conditions apply. So with that, have a listen to this week's episode of Be Right.
Welcome back to Be Right, presented by William Hill. I'm Alex Myers. As always, I'm joined by Stephen Hennessy, Christopher Powers. We've got a great guest this week, Abraham Anser, certainly a DFS darling, as we like to say, and a guy who's been knocking on the door trying to get that first W. President's Cup participant in 2019. So we have a good chat with him. We'll get into that in a second. He was a lot of fun to talk with. But first, we need to wrap up the Valspar Championship, which I believe we finally had a little bump in the road, right, Steve? We didn't hit anybody this week.
Man, I've been betting Sam Burns for months.
I know. That's the killer. That's the killer. Exactly.
Yeah. Too sharp. I mean, we were on them months ago.
We saw it coming, just not last week. But yeah, he played great at the Zurich too. I don't know why we, you know, didn't make that correlation.
Right.
It's a bummer not to hit when you've been hitting, you know, week after week. Powers hits one, then I hit one. It's been a nice run, but hopefully we get back on the hot streak and not. Hopefully this isn't a cold streak. You're always fearing the cold streak in gambling. So.
Right. Right. And CP made it back alive from bachelor trip.
Barely.
I asked him how was the trip, and he just said, "Too much." That was his response. So,
way too much. I'm just starting to feel good again. And the Venmo charges are just coming fast and furious right now. So it's It's a little, it's going to be a light week for me. I'll tell that to the listeners now. I did make a few bets and, you know, I feel good about them, but yeah, I'm not going too crazy this week because I just got a third $200+ Venmo charge. Geez. So
well, what'd you think? It was free. I mean, you got to pay for
no, hotel. I mean, we paid for it way in advance. It was canceled. Then we got the money back. Then we repaid for it. Then we like added stuff, like we went on a boat party.
Oh, yeah,
you
gotta do the boat thing in Austin.
Yeah, then we did the one guy ordered we had a bartender at the house for the Derby, and everyone didn't even want to drink anymore. So she kind of made like 2 drinks total. But we gotta pay her. It's just like, my god, it just never ends. But all in all, it was It's not too bad Venmo charge wise. I thought it was going to be way worse, right. But yeah, they're coming fast and furious right now. But yeah, just starting to feel good again. So that's a good sign. Drinking plenty of water.
No, but it's one of those things. Like you're on those trips, it's so much fun. Like you said, you've prepaid for so much of it, so you're kind of like, I'm already in. And then these things pop up, and you're like, oh, that sounds great, great. And then you get back, and you get hit, and you're like, did I really got to, you know, pay, do for that? So I don't
know. Did we have to go on the boat?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, well, got some stuff going on. Yeah, Burn Steve, I mean, that's a great point. We what was that event where we had him and he was
every one of them?
Which one? Yeah, every one of them. Tournament. All right, pretty much. Yeah.
Amex. Was it Amex? No.
I think it was one in the fall. And he was
I think we just bet all the Florida ones.
on him at Sanderson. He didn't win.
Sanderson, I think that was it. Yeah. But I agree. I mean, we've been on him so much, and, you know, we've been expecting, you know, obviously he's, congrats to him. He's no longer the guy who beat Tiger in a meaningless final round at the Honda a few years ago. That was kind of his claim to fame for a while, even though he was, you know, this great player coming out of LSU and everything else. We know about his amazing driving and putting stats. It's kind of, you know, he drives it and he puts it, you know, it's one of those guys. And so it's about the irons and coming through for a week. And, we found out after that, he had a practice putting green in his backyard because he negotiated with his parents. He got them to put a backyard putting green into his yard in order, if he were to play one more year of high school football or even middle school football. So kudos to him. He struck up a nice deal. It ended up paying off because he's one of the best putters on the planet. But I'm with you, Steve, and CP. It would have been nice if he had picked one of those weeks that we bet on him to do it. Justin Ray kept tweeting out too. He's now led or co-led after 9 rounds this season, which is, I think, 3 more than anyone else on tour. So this is a guy who, like, we've seen his name a ton at the top of the leaderboard. Obviously, Riviera, he was wire to wire into the back 9 there, blew a 3-shot lead down the stretch. So it's just a matter of time. We should have kept with it. We didn't. We learned.
It's happening a lot this year. A lot of guys are finally kind of
breaking
through, which makes me like a certain someone that we'll get to in a bit.
All right. Well, also another guy who we really like, a guy who we've all bet on before, you know, maybe done well with DFS, but maybe not quite hit an outright winner yet. He's come close with 3 runner-ups. Abraham Answer, again, as I mentioned, played very well for the International President's Cup team in 2019. Of course, he kind of went viral with that meme video we ended up asking him about, the whole Tiger early handshake. And Abe was great to talk about that. He talked about a lot of other fun things too, including when he was in Odessa, he actually did go to some Permian Panther high school football game. So that was cool too. So please have a listen to our chat with Abraham Answer. We're excited to welcome PGA Tour player and President's Cup participant in 2019, Abraham Answer. Abraham, thanks for joining us today, man. And congrats on coming off a nice top 5 there in the last week.
Alex, thanks so much for having me, man. Yeah, it was fun. Golf course that I truly enjoy and just building up on it. Game feels in a good spot.
Yeah, I think that's three top 5s this year. You know, obviously not a lot of missed cuts or anything. How would you assess how your season's going thus far in this, the 2020-21 campaign?
I think pretty solid and steady. Nothing crazy, but I like where my game is at. Obviously, want to hoist a trophy here soon, but I'm not trying to put any added pressure. I just want to keep doing my thing, and I feel my game's trending the right way. And just be patient, man. But like I said, I feel like I'm doing a good job with my body and training and all that. That I'm feeling like it's trending the right direction for sure.
Sure,
that's funny you say that. I was going to ask about kind of how, you know, I would kind of compare you to Tony Finau, just constantly top 10ing, knocking on the door, and you see a guy like Sam Burns win yesterday and another guy that was patient, kind of waited his turn. Is there ever a time where you feel like, man, I don't want to say helpless, but just like you top 10 every week and you just haven't gotten that win yet. But then you say, you know, just be patient and kind of wait for your time to come. You kind of lean in that department, I would assume.
Yeah, it just depends how you approach it mentally. I think if you can get frustrated very quickly, obviously, and it can be very annoying knowing that you have what it takes to win or whatever. But I'm also playing a lot of the tournaments that the field are really, really strong. So I'm not playing, you know what I mean? So I'm focusing my schedule on big events and obviously courses that I like and everything, but it's not like so every event that I'm playing, it's a really good event and it's not easy to win. Obviously if you're a good player, you can win anywhere, but or any tournament or any course, but like I said, it's annoying that I haven't won on the PGA Tour, but I like to be consistent. I like to be right there, and I'd rather do that than maybe win and then disappear for a while, and that, you know, I like just consistent golf, and I take pride on that. And but yeah, I try to be very patient with it, and whenever it comes, it comes, and I just got to keep doing my thing.
Well, obviously, in November at the Masters, you threw yourself into that final group with Dustin Johnson and Sung Jae Im. I know you didn't have your best day that final round, but what was that experience like? I mean, we always hear about how different it is playing in the final group of even a regular event, but what was it like at a major, and not even just a major, but the Masters? What was that whole experience like for you that day?
Yeah, that was a tough one to just stay in the moment. I was really pumped. It was an event that I was looking forward to play for a long, long time. That was my first Masters, and being able to perform real well and play solid up until Sunday. And then I teed up in the last group there with DJ and Sanjay, and I'm like, man, this is pretty cool. And I mean, I try to stay in the moment and obviously play my to best of my abilities. I just didn't roll it very good that day, and I was never really settled in. But it was a great, great learning experience. Used to know that I can be on the last group there in my first Masters experience, and gave me a lot of confidence. Now I know what I'll maybe feel like if I'm in that situation again, and hopefully do a better job.
Sticking with the Masters, we saw Hideki win, and just how big that was for Japan. Do you feel like a big win like that could have a similar impact in Mexico for you?
That would be really, really cool, first of all. And I felt like Mexican golf has been taking off a little bit ever since really Lorena kind of opened our eyes that it was possible for some of us to make it out there and compete on big events and try to be best in the world. So that's somebody that I looked up to when I was a young guy, and I was like, man, we can definitely do this. And the golf it's been taking off a little bit in Mexico, which is nice to see, and in Latin America as well. And I feel like winning an event like that would be tremendous. Seeing Hideki do that for Japan, and I mean, golf is a lot bigger in Japan than in Mexico, but it's trending in the right direction, man. We're doing everything possible to do that and make it more appealing for kids to join the game.
Speaking of this year's Masters, unfortunately you had that penalty come up, and I just want to, I think everybody kind of had your back with that whole thing. And I had to watch a video about 10 times before I could even see it. How crazy was that? How disappointing is that when you're trying your hardest at a major, something like that comes up? And then how proud of you were you of yourself to bounce back that next day and even still make the cut and end up having a good week?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a weird situation. I've never had anything like that ever happen, obviously. And I was having dinner already, and then I get a call, and then I like, all this is going on. I was like, what is happening? Like, you're already thinking about the next day, you know, what you want to do, and then battling, because that afternoon played really tough, and battling for like, I think I shot one over, and I was like, okay, that wasn't too bad. I was just grinding, and then they're like, well, you got a little two extra points going towards you. I was like, man, so that was deflating, but I mean, the rules are rules, man. We got to have rules in this game, and it's sometimes they can be like that, and I had to bounce back, and that was the only option I really had. I mean, I can get mad or whatever or disappointed, but that's not going to help me. That's not going to change anything. So I tried just to flip it and give me a little more of like a fuel or whatever it was to kind of get pumped up and shoot a low one the next day, because I had to just make the cut. And but yeah, it was unfortunate. Obviously everybody was pretty mad about it too. I feel like I got so many messages, like, I can't believe it, from right, you know, I mean, friends and family obviously, but also other tour pros, and just, but it is what it is. The rules are rules, and I mean, I was holding the club, so I'm the only one that liable for it, obviously. So
right.
So silver lining in that, I think you had like close to 2.5 million views. I'm sure everyone was Googling your name. That has to help out your PIP ranking, right?
I guess so, yeah. But I'd rather have that lifting a trophy or something, not because of ruling.
Yeah, I mean, Chris mentions the PIP ranking there. Obviously, we all kind of found out about that in recent weeks. I just wonder, when did the a player on tour like yourself find out about the Player Impact Program, and how was this years in the making? Was it just months in the making, or kind of what was the backstory there?
Honestly, for me, I just saw it. I saw a post, and I had no idea what was going on. I was like, I don't even know to this point how is that going to work, or how is it going to be distributed. I have no idea. You guys probably know more than me, so I'm just trying to just work on my game and say. I mean, I'm a little bit. I mean, I'm active on social media, but nothing too crazy. But I guess that's where the world's going. I mean, it's. I don't know. I didn't really know what to say about that, to be honest.
Going back to what you were saying about consistency, I know there's that quote that's kind of made the rounds. I think it's going to be in our upcoming issue that you said kind of at the beginning of your career, you saw Rory on the range, I think at the Safeway Open, and you were kind of so astounded by the way he was hitting the ball that you kind of changed your game a little. Now to think years later that Rory McIlroy has kind of changed his game to kind of try and be more like Bryson. Are you just absolutely shocked by that after seeing that range session so many years ago?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that can happen to really anybody. And it's not only about distance. It can be like the way you putt, the way you chip. I mean, it can be, and one little thing can really snowball to a lot of bigger things. So this game, for me, is driven by confidence. And if you lose your confidence, it starts creeping on other parts of your game. It doesn't matter if it's your putting or so. I'm not surprised that can happen to even one of the best golfers in the world. This is what is really tough about this game. You can see some things that work really well for other guys, and then for you it could be the worst thing, but you will never know until you try it. So once I figure that out for myself, I'm like, I'm just going to stick to what I got and just get better at what I do. And that's what I've been doing. And it's been paying off, and I've been able to get better little by little.
You mentioned your training before, and I wondered how big of a fitness guy are you? Obviously, you know, you're never going to be confused with a Dustin Johnson or a bomber like that, but your distance.
What are you talking about?
You're looking big, man. But no, your distance stats are pretty solid. And in strokes gained off the tee, you're in like the 30 to 40 rank, it seems, every season, which is amazing. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize that that's actually one of the strengths of your game. So how much do you attribute that, I guess, to your fitness and your training, or do you just have natural speed, I guess, to hit it that far and keep up with these bigger guys?
No, I mean, I quickly realized when I got to the PGA Tour, I worked out when I was in college. And then my first 2 years as a pro, I didn't really work out or do much. And I started to get a little bit of pain and stuff in my back. So that didn't help. And I met my trainer in San Antonio because I was not feeling very good. I got referred to him. And this was probably close to 4 years now, maybe 3.5, 4 years. And we just set up on a plan. He's like, all right, we're not going to do anything crazy. We're just going to go little by little, getting better, getting better, and getting better. First thing is to always just stay healthy. That was the biggest goal is to not miss any tournaments due to injury and make my career longer. And then obviously maximize my body and my swing to what I can just be optimized. And I'm five, six, five, seven in a really good day. I need to, I need to squeeze every single ounce I got to compete with these guys. You know, everybody's tall, strong, athletic, but without losing focus, as in like, all right, I'm going to need to swing out of my shoes. I feel like for me, that would be a bad thing. Try to chase distance. I feel like the way I've been doing it, it's been pretty good, and it's worked well for me. I like to be really precise with my irons, my distance control. So if I chase distance, I feel like I'm going to be hurt a little bit on my approaches to the green with distance control. So I'm just being really cautious with that. And actually this past year and a half, I lost a little bit of distance off the tee. My driver that I had a lot of confidence with cracked, and took me a little while to find one, which I now got a driver that I really, really like again. and I'm starting to swing a little bit faster. I was just trying to kind of hit little guiders out there just to find the fairway, and my swing speed went down, but just with my driver, just because the confidence wasn't there. And now I'm starting to see it kind of creep up back to where it was.
If you look at your stats, you pretty much do everything well, but is there any area that you think you could improve in, or do you think you can improve in all of them?
Absolutely. There's plenty of things I can improve on. I feel like my iron play has been really solid this year. I guess my fairway bunkers could be a little bit better. The area that I need to probably price a little bit more. Putting, you can always be better at putting for sure. I've had some really good weeks, but also just little stretches that I happened to, like this past month, I striped it. Like I hit it really, really good. And I just felt like I didn't make anything. And then I don't hit it very good. And then I make everything. I'm like, man, can I just put it all together right. for 1 week? But yeah, I can definitely get better at everything, man, for sure.
Similar question. I know you've had, I just wonder what major do you think your game sets up best for? I know you've had a couple solid finishes at the Masters already. Is that the one, or is it something else? I know you haven't played in a ton of majors yet, but which is there one that you think suits your game best?
I would definitely say the Masters or the Open. I think the British Open, I love kind of that kind of play, tough conditions and linksy fast and kind of like fun short game kind of shots and being creative around the greens. I really enjoy that, but I feel like the Masters, I just really like how the layout of the course, the lines of the tee. It can be a little claustrophobic, but I actually feel very confident off the tee there and the par threes as well. So, I mean, it's a golf course that you never really end or never finish to learn. It's every time you play is a learning experience, but I feel like for just the two times I've played it, I got a pretty good grasp of kind of how I attacked that golf course. Sure. Soft and firm, because I played it the softest it's ever been and the firmest it's played in a long time as well.
Right.
I'll definitely keep the Open in mind for betting purposes down the line. But all right, we got a couple more, but first we got to ask you about, everyone knows the logo on your hat. I'm sure everyone Googles it when they see you. It doesn't get more badass than tequila logo on the hat, especially with what some other logos some guys wear. But tell us about Flecha Azul and what you do with them.
Yeah, man, it's been a really cool journey. So this actually started in a PGA Tour event. I met my business partner and really good friend, Aaron Marquez, in a pro-am at the Charles Schwab. So two Mexican guys that we just randomly got paired together, and we started talking about tequila at the time. This was probably a little over 4 years ago, I would say. And we happened that we both drink tequila in our time off, not where we're playing. and we hit it off, man. We hit it off. It was a really cool guy, young guy, mid-30s, well, all upper 30s. And he's been a really successful entrepreneur, and really both of us coming from kind of humble beginnings. We just figured out in our own ways, him in the business world and me in the golfing world. And the idea came out there, and we're like, man, it would be really cool if we have our own brand and to bring the best quality tequila to the market. And it took a long time for us to launch it. I mean, it's going to be about a year now. We launched in 2020, but we've been working on this for a long time now, and it's been really cool project. So many guys and key people around it that is it's been really, really fun, and I'm really proud to wear the hat and be co-founder in the brand.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny because it seems like most PGA Tour guys try to avoid the pro-ams, right? But you actually ended up having a good time at one and making a business partner.
I've met some unbelievable people. And this goes back to when I was in college and how I was raised as well. In college, my college coach, Ryan Hibble, always told me, he's like, hey, you're going to play in some pro-ams. You never know who you're going to meet. Like, be nice. Yeah. And my family always told me the same thing as in, like, you never know who the guy, and it doesn't matter what he's wearing or what car, whatever, you don't know anything about the guy. Treat everybody with respect, you know, and that's kind of how I go about my life. And yeah, I met some really cool people in pro-ams that you will never imagine. You see them and you have no idea who they are or whatever, and they're like, wow, this guy is a freaking stallion. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You mentioned college, and I wanted to ask you, I know you ended up at Oklahoma. You were a great player at Oklahoma, but you started in Odessa at a smaller college, obviously. And Odessa, to football fans, that's where Friday Night Lights took
place.
Did you get any experience of that, with the local high school vibe, about how big of a scene the football scene is there? And did you ever think about playing football yourself growing up?
Definitely not football. I played soccer growing up, but not football. I mean, look, and it was cool when I was there. There was really nothing to do, really. You're in the middle of nowhere. You either play golf or you just partied, or there was high school football, and it was huge. I actually went to a couple of games, and I was
that's awesome.
What is going on? Like, I went to the Permian Basin, and I went to a couple of games, and it was actually pretty exciting. Like, it was cool. I never thought I was going to enjoy watching high school kids, and they were actually really, really good.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
It was a cool experience for sure.
Yeah.
So I was just looking at, going back to tequila, I was looking at your Instagram, and I noticed Mark Wahlberg comments on your Instagram. You guys boys?
Yeah, we're good friends. A lot of no things in common. The guy is a really big entrepreneur as well. We share a lot of things in common. Loves golf. The guy is crazy about golf.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's a good dude, man.
Yeah, that's not awesome. A bad guy to be friends with.
Yeah. I want to ask you, obviously, about the 2019 President's Cup, and certainly you were the standout player probably for the international team. Of course, everybody wants to talk about that Sunday singles match with Tiger, and you just caught him. I know. And of course, we understand everything that came from that, and we loved your attitude and everything else. But I wanted to ask you specifically, have you ever seen the video, I'm sure you have, that someone made of where they really exaggerated the early Tiger handshake? Have you seen that one?
I think that's been sent to me north of 10,000 times. So yeah, of course I've seen it, and it was a great edit. Whoever did that, I mean, I give him props, because he came out pretty good. Yeah, for sure.
People thought it was real.
People still do. It's kind of fake news.
Yeah. No, absolutely. There's a lot of people out there that just believe that is actually what happened.
Yeah. No, but seriously, you were playing fantastic that week, and you were the best player on your team. He was the best player on his team. And you know, unlike in the Ryder Cup, they can actually set these matches up. So you kind of did want to take him on. I mean, what that shows, you talk about how important confidence is in your game. How you must have been feeling really good that week, and to have such a great experience playing for such a great team.
Yeah, no, that was probably the best experience so far. I mean, it's hard to compare because it's a team effort, and but just the aura of that place, being around my coaches and teammates. I mean, it was so much fun. The golf course is one of my favorites in the world, and playing against the best guys in the world too, it's really cool. And my dream as a kid was to play alongside Tiger Woods, right? So this was one of the reasons why I started playing golf, and why I wanted to get to the PGA Tour, is because Tiger inspired me to play golf. He made golf cool, and I was like, this is pretty sweet. And then whenever they were making the so they asked me this question, a month before the President's Cup in Mexico. I was in Mayakoba. They asked me who would I want to play in the singles. And I was like, man, it would be a dream come true to play against Tiger Woods. Are you kidding me?
Of course.
It's like, no disrespect to the other 10, 12 guys, but I was like, I don't really care who I play, but Tiger Woods would be amazing. That would be life-changing, you know, to play. Yeah. And then you fast forward a month, and then I'm like, oh God, it actually really happened. So I'm like, I'm about to get, because the media, obviously, you know how that went down. The media blew it up the wrong way. And I'm like,
we did?
I just want to let you know, it wasn't
us. You guys?
It wasn't us specifically, I swear. It really wasn't.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it, because it was annoying, because I was I just got done or whatever with media. And then I say that I want to play against my hero, and then the next thing I say, like, in quotations, I want Tiger. It's like, oh my God.
I can't believe the media would twist your words like that.
It's amazing.
Me neither. now I know.
Yeah. All right, so this is a betting podcast, so we should ask you about this week. Kind of, you said you feel great about your game right now, and I'm not sure how many times you played Quail Hollow, but just kind of, how do you feel about the course, and are you kind of ready to contend? You know, back to back weeks. You did that a hard course last week. This is another tough course too.
Yeah, I truly enjoy golf courses that you have to be extremely precise, and this golf course is a little bit like that, obviously, but it's a little bit longer. So I wish I hit it a little bit, maybe 20 yards farther. It'd be a lot nicer, but I like it. I like the golf course. I played it at least once. I don't know if I played it twice or not, but at least once. Obviously, last year it didn't happen, but it's a golf course that I'm like, man, I want to come back every year. And I enjoyed it. You have to be really precise. And I feel good with my long irons too. So I'm not scared of aiming at the pin when I can with a 5-4 iron.
Well, you're 35-1 to win, which is pretty good. You're getting some good respect from the odds makers. It's a tournament. A lot of guys have won their first event there. I think Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, just to name a couple. So maybe this is the week. Anything else going forward that's really standing out for you on the schedule? Any other events that you're really looking forward to coming up?
Ooh, I mean, I'm excited for Kiowa. I've never been there. I've never played the golf course. I know it's okay. A long, long golf course, but I'm just kind of excited to see it. It'll be windy. It'll be long.
Yeah.
It's a major. So last time I played, where was it? PGA. My first PGA was at Bethpage Black, and that was a monster. That was tough.
Yeah.
But I grinded out and had a decent finish. Like I said, in paper, it's not like the golf course is like just tailor made for me, but I like to figure out. Hopefully it plays really tough. Obviously the Open and the Olympics are kind of like the highlights of, because I've never played the golf course or played in the Open, and I've never played in the Olympics.
Sure. And I should mention that you have three runner-ups, and your first one came at the Northern Trust at Liberty National, and that is where is going to be held this year again. I'm sure Chris and I, we're local, we'll be there as well. So that's kind of, do you, when you get to play a course again that you've played well at, does that give you either even extra confidence, or do we overrate that?
Sometimes I've it's weird because sometimes you feel like, oh, I know this golf course really well, and then just something happens, you just don't play that good, and then there's golf courses that you think doesn't suit me well, and then you end up playing good. So I try not to really put expectations. I feel like that before, that has hurt me, as in like, oh, I feel really good this week and I really like this golf course, and then maybe there's 2-3 holes that don't go your way and you get mad because you think that you should be 4-under by now. And so I try just to take week by week and just be like, you know what? I'm just going to don't think that I should be able to win this tournament. I'm just going to like try my best. And usually when I go like that, I have a better result than when I have expectations.
Sure. Well, seems like you're trending towards that first win. We know that if you do win, you're going to be putting some Fletcher Azul in the trophy probably to celebrate. So
absolutely.
So thanks again, Abraham, for doing this. We really appreciate it, and good luck the rest of the season. We'll see you down the road.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Abraham Answer for a great chat on this week's episode. Before we get into our breakdown of the Wells Fargo, I want to give another shout out to William Hill for sponsoring our podcast. They have a couple of interesting odds boosts this week. Max Homa, who contended last week at the Valspar, won here the last time the event was played in 2019. He's boosted up to 35-1. Jason Day, who also has a nice history at Quail Hollow, he's boosted up to 50-1. For more info, go to williamhill.com. And remember, if you're in a state where William Hill is available, use the promo code GolfDigestRF as a new user for a juicy sign-up bonus.
All right, I want to thank Abraham Answer once again. We will be looking out for him this week as well as the weeks going forward. Guys, so let's, Steve, I'll start with you. And first of all, Steve, before we get into Quail Hollow, because I know, it's one of the top courses in the country. You are one of the guys behind our America's 100 Greatest Courses ranking. I just want to congratulate you and Derek and everyone else who worked tirelessly on this project. It came out this AM as we're recording. And so you're our course guy. You always get into the courses, but I want everybody to know how legit of a course guy you are. We also did a podcast where you and Derek were on as guests. Anyway, congrats. You must feel a lot.
I wish people could see video because Steve's hair reflects how much he's been grinding on the 100 greatest right
now. You must be pretty relieved to have it out there now.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I mean, people have to go look at the rankings. There's a page for every course on the rankings, and there's like 5 to 10 photos of each course with panelist comments. It's been the better part of the last week putting it all together. And I got to give a shout out to our guy, Jared Goldstein, for helping a bunch with it, and Greg Gottfried too. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. Anyone who's into, you know, golf courses at all, you know, needs to just pour over our rankings, listen to the Local Knowledge podcast with Myers. That does a good job of explaining the process. And, you know, it's something like, as we say in the podcast, the more you get into it, like there's just so much to learn. And I think it just furthers your enjoyment of golf in general. I've found that to be true, even as a hacker. You know, I don't mind hacking it around. Like when we played Quaker Ridge on Wednesday, Myers, like the entire time, I'm just kind of like soaking up.
Dude, you know, really were taking photos from behind the green.
Yeah.
You were so into it. I mean, I am too, but not like you. And it's fun to see, but you're right. You get into it and you start appreciating even more and more.
Yeah. The little nuances and things like you otherwise wouldn't notice. So anyway, yeah, big day for Golf Digest. We publish our rankings every other year. So go check that out. And a new course to our 100 greatest is Quail Hollow. So shout out to Quail Hollow.
It's perfect timing.
Yeah, that's big for the club. A couple new additions to the rankings, and Quail Hollow is one of them. Obviously a venue people are familiar with, the 2017 PGA Championship here. Justin Thomas won, and you know, he's the favorite this week. So, you know, rightfully so, since he's been playing so well and really hit the ball great last week too. Just really struggled with the putter, which is kind of what we've seen from him over the, you know, that's kind of his weakness. He'll get a hot putter, but you know, mostly it's a little negative from time to time. So, but he's rightfully the favorite. You know, like I said, most people are familiar with Quail Hollow, but the biggest thing to me, I've had the chance to walk this place a couple times. It's such a big ballpark, as people like to say. I mean, it's over 7,600 yards, par 72. I think 8 par fours are over 450 yards. It's just, it's a beast of a course. It's a lot of fun to watch. I don't know about playing. You know, it's going to beat you up for sure. There are, you know, there's some scoring opportunities, you know, holes like 4 through 8, it gets a little tighter, you know, some shorter holes there, but yeah, it's a great venue. And it's really going to reward ball striking. You gotta hit great irons. You gotta be in the fairway. That the rough could be thick and you could get, you know, in a tough angle. Some of these greens are difficult approaching from the wrong side. So, you know, I'm looking at ball striking kind of similar to last week, but this is way different off the tee. You have to be a really good driver of the ball at Quail Hollow to succeed. So, but you know, a guy like Kevin Kisner in 2017 at the PGA, I mean, he was right there. Obviously not a long hitter and, you know, not known for his driving. So a variety of games could play well here. So, that's what I got on Quail Hollow, and a great field. You know, we got JT, John Rahm. You'll go over the guys, Myers, but it's a little sad for me because this is the part of the year where like we start to see Tiger come, you know, usually like,
oh yeah.
Quail Hollow to me is always like, oh, is Tiger going to play? Like it's a great sign if Tiger's playing, or, you know, in these comebacks the last couple of years. And obviously, you know, it's not going to be that case for a while with Tiger, but a great field nonetheless.
Yeah. We got 4 of the top 5 in the official World Golf ranking. The only one missing actually is Dustin Johnson, who has played in this event before, but he's taken a week off. He's actually been struggling a bit for him. But yeah, you mentioned Justin Thomas. Let's look at our odds. Courtesy of William Hill, our friends there. Justin Thomas is the favorite, plus 1,100, followed by John Rahm, plus 1,200, Bryson DeChambeau, plus 1,600. Rory McIlroy, two-time winner here, plus 1,800. Xander Schauffele, plus 2,000. Those are the top five guys. We'll start with those guys. And Rory, I'll throw you up to you guys first. I mean, here's a guy. He's number 15 in the official World Golf ranking. That's the lowest he's been in 12 years. That's before he even won here in 2010 for his first PGA Tour title. We know all the success he's had here, though. There's a bald eagle here on the property named after him. You know, is this the week where we see him bounce back, or is there somebody else in that top five CP who you're looking at?
Nobody in that top five, and I'm not on Rory for sure. I'm seeing a lot of, you know, and it's typical, like, oh, he's 20 to one. You got to bet Rory. And I got to be honest, I feel like we've said that for like a year now. I can recall the BMW, I think, Myers, you were on him where he was maybe he was 18 to one or 20 to one. And it was kind of the same conversation, like, oh, auto bet. And, you know, I think he was tied for the lead after 36 and then kind of faded on the weekend, which is become a common thing with him. But recently he's just been bad, as we've seen, terrible at the Masters. I'm not ready to get on it, even at that number, which, you know, I'm a Brooks guy when he balloons a little bit. So I should also be a Rory guy when he balloons, but I'm just not there with him. And then I'm not really on anybody else. Thomas is obviously scary. Tee to green, there is no one better on the planet right now. But like Steve said, the putter was pretty awful. I think if everything falls one week, he's going to win by like 10 strokes, but not willing to bet on that at 11. Rahm, I think there was a pretty fraudulent fifth place at the Masters. You know, I think he went 72, 72, 72, and then pulled a 66 out on Sunday. So hasn't really had a complete week yet. So I'm not too interested in that. Theoretically, this should be a great course for him, but I think he finished 58th here in 2017, and that was the only time he played here. So not on Rahm. Bryson's hasn't played in a while. I'm going to say a little rust factor. We said that about JT last week, and I guess it proved to be true with the putter, but not on Bryson, not on Rory, not on Rahm. So I'm on nobody under 20.
I feel like, I don't know, applying your theory to Koepka with Rory powers. I mean, he's looked bad, Rory, but, you know, it wasn't too long ago that he played well at Concession. He finished sixth. He finished 10th at Bay Hill, and then has looked bad since. But this is just a course that he loves. I mean, he's won twice, a runner-up, T4, T8, T10. You know, good vibes here, in addition to Ricky, who we'll talk about later, way down the odds board for Ricky. I feel like, you know, like you said, this is kind of like an auto bet almost 20 to 1 for Rory here. I don't care how bad his game's been. In the last three events, he could figure it out, and he's had time to figure it out. 20 to 1 is definitely interesting. JT, it could just run away with this, you know, maybe throwing a bunch of doubles this week with JT, and then, you know, European tour, try to catch a lottery ticket. But I'm with you. Otherwise, yeah, I'm passing on the rest of the board. More interested in some of the guys down the list.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of inclined to agree with you, although, man, Rory has been really bad. Usually when Rory has a couple weeks in a row where he's not top 10, we're like, oh man, what's wrong with Rory? But he's actually been missing cuts. Yeah. And just really, you know, he was on that hot streak before COVID came last year, came back. He, you know, kind of had a few decent finishes, but man, it has been a rough run for him to fall that far. Okay. Let's get into the next tier of guys here. You've got Webb Simpson, Mr. North Carolina, at plus 2,200. Victor Hovland coming off a sneaky T3 at Valspar, plus 2,200. Patrick Reed, plus 2,800. Tony Finau, plus 2,800. Will Zalatoris, plus 2,800. Joaquin Niemann, Corey Connors, Patrick Cantlay, all at 30 to 1. Steve, I'll let you go first. You know, obviously, Zalatoris, I'll just start by saying, you know, it's kind of, we keep talking about how ridiculous it is. he keeps needing sponsor exemptions to get into these events. Obviously, it's not a big deal for him. Anyone would want him in there, including Wells Fargo. But it is kind of crazy. He's up to 28th in the world. He'll probably pass Rory McIlroy at some point in the next few weeks. And yet he's begging to get into these tournaments. Just put him on the tour already. I mean, this guy is one of the studs. And again, he's getting a lot of respect this week.
Yeah, he's being talked up amongst gambling Twitter, and rightfully so. It's, you know, the driving, the iron play. He's elite. He's one of the top 10 ball strikers in the world. That's, you know, that's not far-fetched. That's the stats. He's got the results to prove it, you know, and the results at really good golf courses, tough golf courses, he's done it. So wouldn't be surprised if this is his week. I think a couple other guys are interesting to me in this range. Victor Hovland, first off, it's going to be tough for me not to bet him this week. How good his driver's been, you know, the third place last week, had that hot Sunday. But what stands out to me is his par four scoring, 450 yards to 500 yards, the last 50 rounds per Fantasy National. He's third in this field. He's 26th on par fours over 500 yards. Just, you know, so good. He's been trending toward a win. He's had a bunch of good finishes. The 20 to one isn't great. So, you know, I don't think he's going to be that popular of a bet. Maybe you'll get a little steam and catch a 22, 23. But he's got my attention for sure. Zalatoris, I've almost pulled the trigger. I'm probably going to wait or just not bet it, because it seems like all of the gambling Twitter's on it. I'm interested in Patrick Reed at 30 to one. I think, you know, people aren't going to bet him after the Valspar. He missed the cut, burned me in a one and done, which I was pissed about, but he's first in that par four scoring stat, 450 to 500 yards. He's at 30 to one, and at the rate this guy wins, and he wins at really good golf courses, tough courses. You know, Reed is interesting. He's going to miss a bunch. People are going to miss a bunch of greens. He's one of the best scramblers. I mean, 30 to one at Reed, that has my attention. What about you, CP?
I'm on Tony Finau this week, 28 to one. Breakthrough winners, kind of a theme recently, and at Wells Fargo, obviously Rory, Fowler, Anthony Kim, back when it was the Wachovia. So I'm going to go with that breakthrough winner theme and the big ballpark. I mean, that should scream Tony Finau. Seen some solid recent form, his winter form when he was kind of runner up every week and didn't quite get the win. So I'm on Tony, 10th at Masters, obviously. And then good week at Zurich with Champ, except for Sunday on the alternate shot, which is understandable in that format. But yeah, not much else besides I'm just hoping for that Tony breakthrough, as we all have been for the past, you know, however many years. And then I'm going to go to Cantlay at 28 to one. I just like that price for Patrick Cantlay, a guy who missed three consecutive cuts, although that I think the match play was in there, so it's technically not consecutive, but showed a little bit of form at Zurich. If you go and look, he actually carried Xander on the par fives. And now Xander contributed equally, but the par fives, I think Cantlay birdied almost every one, and you got to make birdies on par fives this week and then kind of play defense on the rest of the course. So just like that number a lot for Cantlay, 28 to one, and Tony, 28 to one. I think that's two solid prices for those guys.
By the way, shout out to PGA Splits 101 on Twitter. Had some great stats here. Not only looking at strokes gained approach, but on tough GIR and tough proximity courses. So similar to Quail Hollow, the best when you adjust strokes gained approach to that, Will Zalatoris is number one by far at gaining 1.04 shots, followed by Corey Connors, 0.87, Matthew Neesmith, 0.83, and then you have Justin Thomas and Tony Finau plus 0.78 and plus 0.77. So, you know, I'm kind of agreeing with the Finau pick there. It's funny how we would call this a breakthrough because he has won before, but kind of like the Puerto Rico Open in 2016. We've almost
distant
forgotten
memory.
Yeah.
And that guy, PGA Splits, I'm glad you shouted him out. He's he's got so many good stats like that. People need to go.
Incredible. Yeah, seriously. Great, great stuff here. But yeah, definitely speaks. I mean, not surprising to see Zalatoris and Justin Thomas up there just because we know their ball striking in general is good. But at these particular courses where, you know, the greens regulation and proximity becomes even more difficult, they get elevated. And Tony Finau is right there as well. So definitely something to keep in mind.
True, the true breakthrough. Kind of that thing Answer said was pretty fascinating, how he likes to play in the bigger events and he wants to win a bigger event and not like a Puerto Rico Open. He didn't say that specifically, but I'm sure Tony Finau is thinking the same, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. All right, let's get into that next wave, kind of the mid-level here, which is usually our favorite spot. And we start with Sung J.M., plus 3,300. Now, CP just did a post about all the rounds that this guy's played the last 2 years. As he points out, we know this already, but just to see the number, it is pretty staggering. Cameron Tringale, who just made his own mark, passing the he's now number one on the career earnings list for someone who's never won a tournament. So, you know, he just made 400K at Valspar. You know, he's had a nice career, just has not gotten a win, but he's plus 3,500. Our boy Abe Answer, plus 3,500. Max Homa, who's about as hot as anyone. I'm surprised, actually, that he's at plus 3,500. Brian Harman, plus 4,000. Jason Day, who's played well here, plus 4,000. And you got Russell Henley, plus 4,500. Shane Lowry, plus 4,500. Tommy Fleetwood, plus 4,500. Then you get into the 50 or one or better, which is headed by Keegan Bradley, who just came off that runner-up finish. So, guys, well, CP, I'll let you start with Abe Answer, or you just mentioned him, or anybody else, Max Homa in that group, or Sungjae. Who do you want to take out of that mid-level range?
I'm on our guest, Abraham Answer, and I'm also on Sungjae M, actually.
I figured.
Got a pretty strong number on him elsewhere. I think whatever he is at William Hill, sorry. I got a little bit of – he's 35-1 at William Hill. I think I got him 45-1 at a book that shall not be named. But Abraham, I'm betting on, just loved our conversation with him and trying to bet on the good vibes. And Sungjae is – the approach play is kind of back, and – we know he plays tough courses pretty well. So, yeah, I'm on both of those guys.
Sungjae burned me last week, man. I was on him. I mean, he's burned me a lot in the past, but we were back in Florida, you know.
Right.
The vibes were great for Sungjae, and then he really struggled on the weekend.
The putter finally cooled off. He had gained strokes putting and looks like almost 9 straight events and finally lost strokes. But hopefully that was just an outlier week for Sung.
Yeah, at a ball striking place, I can't argue with that. I'm actually passing on this range in total. The number on Tringale is just ridiculous, 33-1. I know how well he's been playing. I've, you know, played him a lot in DFS, had him in a one and done last week, so that was good. But outright, you know, no thanks in this field.
It's getting a little like Harris English was, where you might have to bet him because it's – he's just coming very, very close.
Yeah, of course. Like, depending on the event, like, if this field was weaker, you know, of course. But, like, you know, at the Valero, I was on him. I didn't bet him outright last week. But, yeah, you know, lesser field, I'd be with you. Yeah, Homa's, I mean, he's interesting, but the number's too weak. But he is the defending champ here from 2019. So, I don't know. I'm moving on to some bombs.
Okay. Well, we'll get to some bombs. And starting off, I'm noticing Stuart Sink. I mean, he's sixth in the FedEx Cup right now. He's plus 5,500. That's interesting. He's Bubba Watson also plus 5,500. Ricky Fowler, CP's boy, plus 6,000. Grillo, plus 6,600. We know we've been on him recently. Harold Varner, plus 6,600.
Wait, can we talk about Grillo quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Yes, jump we can. Down.
Powers bet him, you know, Rob Bolton, he was on him. And, you know, Grillo starts off great. Powers is going on his trip. He sends.
Yes.
He's not going to be on Twitter at all on the weekend. I'm going to celebrate my Grillo win early. The guy goes full Keegan and misses the putt. I mean, unbelievable.
That's yeah, I'm sure I saw that on my PGA Tour app at some point, but I don't quite remember.
Well, you did do an early celebration recently on Thursday for someone.
For Morikawa at concession, and he went on to win.
And he won. So, right. You're feeling confident in the early the early calls there. But, yeah, that was an all-time backfire there.
Oh, yeah, I was pumping him up. We got there Thursday night, and a bunch of these Wake Forest kids, my buddies went to Wake Forest, and it's just it was a Wake Forest kind of reunion.
That's awesome, man. I didn't realize you were such a Wake guy.
Oh, it's nothing but Wake kids at this bachelor party. And a lot of them listen, and my buddy pumps me up and gets them all to listen and bet on our bets. And I was like, yeah, I'm on Grillo. And everyone's like, Grillo, we're all on Grillo. And then I guess we were all, you know, feeling some type of way Friday. So luckily nobody brought it up again.
Well, anyway, there's a lot of interesting names down here, which again speaks to the quality of the field. So Steve, I'll let you go first with some of the long shots here.
Sure. I think Keegan at 70-1 is definitely interesting. We're talking about ball striking, and he's been just hitting the shit out of the ball recently. You know, obviously had a couple disappointing shots on Sunday, but was right there. You know, 70-1, I think, you know, compare him to Tringali. Tringali's been playing a little better consistently, but you're getting double the price on Keegan. So I think there's definite value there, you know, especially first round leader. That's, you know, Keegan's MO. So heads with that. I think Russell Henley, I think he's around 60-1. William Hill, you could get him higher. Again, ball striking, he's been one of the best iron players. I mean, all the guys who do this, you know, with podcasts and gambling analysis, you know, Henley pops off the model so much because his iron play is so good. But I just think this is a course where that should really suit his game. So I think that's interesting. I mean, he was 35-1 at Valspar, so you're getting double that price. I just think, you know, there's not too much of a difference in who Russell Henley was last week and this week. And the last guy, sub 100, I have to mention, our guy, CP's guy, more specifically, Ricky Fowler, 80-1. Let's just talk about it. You know, he got the special exemption into the PGA.
No.
People were mad about it, but, you know, he's Ricky Fowler. He's been the man, you know, the last 10 years. I think for him, you know, he's at a course where he's won before. He knows that the, you know, it's been such negative talk around him and, you know, this guy doesn't deserve this special exemption, et cetera. That's got to light a fire under his ass this week. 80-1. I took a stab. I threw some units on him. I kind of hate it, but you know, if he wins, you know, it's just an outright win bet. You know, I don't care if he misses the cut. I don't care if he finishes 50th. I think he can win this tournament. If all things come together, the ball striking has been better recently at a course that he likes. You know, the putter could get hot. So give me some Ricky. What do you think, CP?
No, thanks. Maybe 300-1. I would like it, but there is a much better guy. You said he's 60-1. There's a much better guy at 66 on William Hill. I bet him 80 elsewhere. He's playing very well right now. He loves hard courses. I believe he's said that his favorite event is the PGA Championship, and that's Matt Wallace from England. Third at Valero recently, not so great at the Masters, 34th. Then he popped back at the Heritage, 18th. Like I said, plays hard courses well. 18th at Arnold Palmer. This year he's played Arnold Palmer well before. Fourth at Memorial. Is that a decent course comp, Steve, would you say?
Yeah, Airfield Village? That's a good one for sure.
He likes that course. I don't think he's ever played here, so I guess that could worry you, but plays these hard events well, loves showing up and contending against the, you know, the big boys from America. So I kind of love Matthew Wallace this week. It's my favorite bet.
Wow, favorite bet.
Matthew Wallace.
Okay. I was gonna mention him too, CP. So the vibes are good there. That's a great analysis. Yep,
love Wallace.
Oh, yeah.
All right, spicy nugs. What are we thinking? Is Ricky Fowler the spicy nug, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, I just said Ricky Fowler is going to win. I have how much more spicy?
That's about as spicy as it gets. Interesting. Okay, CP?
I'll go Tony Finau to win, get that breakthrough, second breakthrough victory. Obviously, I already said this, but yeah, I think I think this is the week for Tony to get it done. That's my spicy nug.
I mean, we're just betting on a couple losers. Rick Fowler.
I mean, seriously. Yeah.
Guys who don't win.
I'll give one too, and not as spicy maybe, but just based on PGA Splits 101, that Matthew Neesmith being third in that strokes gained approach adjusted thing, and he's sitting there at 125-1. I'm not going to say he's going to win, but maybe a top 10 bet for Matthew Neesmith as my spicy nug. Then again, shout out to PGA Splits if that hits for sure. All right, so Steve, let's do a little DFS. Steve and Chris, we'll do a little DFS and we'll wrap it up. Any DFS specific plays we should be looking at this week?
Well, you know, you mentioned Neesmith. I think he's a great call for DFS. He's helped a lot of people win money. So that's a great call. I don't have the pricing in front of me. He must be 7,100 thereabouts. I think Lonto Griffin also a good play too. Our guy, Andy Lack, former Golf Digest guy. He had a good stat about Lonto that he's the only player in this field to rank in the top 20 the last 36 rounds in proximity from 175 to 200 yards. Proximity 200 yards plus. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of those approaches this week. Par four scoring from 450 to 500 and driving distance. He's in the top 20 in all those stats. So, you know, if you get Lonto, I think 125-1 outright, you know, DFS, good value there. So those are a couple good names that I like about UCP. You doing some deep dive analysis for DFS yet?
I'm not, but I would definitely build around, you know, with Abe. Abe is just a cut making machine, top 20 machine.
Yes.
Sungjae obviously as well. I would throw in Wallace if I was inclined to do a DFS lineup this week. And then I guess you gotta throw in Justin Thomas for sure. Just the way he's hitting the ball tee to green should his history here. It should set up nicely for him at Quail Hollow for sure.
I think Cam Davis, we didn't go like full bombs, but 150-1 on Cam Davis. He's been one of the better drivers of the golf ball the last year. I think this place should suit his game. He could be wild off the tee. That's not going to always kill you. There's some holes where you can get away with that. He's also 7,100 DFS, kind of a boom or bust pick.
I've probably bet him secretly every week since Amex, where he, I think, finished runner up to Siwoo. So
yeah,
he's another Sam Burns type candidate.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last guy I have to mention who I did bet 200-1, I found elsewhere on a guy who loves this course. I followed him around nine holes at Quail Hollow back in the day. And a guy who's, you know, trending up ball striking wise, had a bad week last week, but Phil Mickelson.
Whoa!
200-1.
There's the spicy nug.
That's another Steve spicy. Going with the big names, but yet they're still spicy. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, and you talk about motivation. He has come out and said he doesn't want to accept one of those special exemptions to the U.S. Open in his hometown of Torrey. And, you know, Rick Gaiman's pointed out how much better his ball striking's been. I think it's worth a flyer. He tends to always play Wells Fargo, like I said, because he really likes this course. I think that's interesting. At 200-1, he's got another win in his system. I don't know if it'll be here, but he's hitting bombs recently, and you got to hit bombs at Quail Hollow. I don't know. This is some poor analysis from CP and I. This is
if you want really poor analysis, people forget who was in the final group with Rory when he won by 7 strokes here in 2015.
Ryan Moore.
Nope. Patrick Rogers was in the final group.
Oh, McIlroy.
He is like 250-1. I want to say he did his normal like 4-under through 9 last week and missed the cut.
Ugh.
So maybe he's got a little something, some magic at Quail Hollow. We'll see. I don't know. Patrick Rogers deep down the board. Of course, he lost by like 7 strokes that week to Rory, but Rory was on a different planet that week.
Phil, I think Phil was the guy Rory tracked down when he won for the first time here too. But Phil, Steve, I agree with you. He doesn't want that special exemption, but then he also said the thing about not being able to focus. And I mean, when you're making a beer commercial every week, you know, I can see how it could be a little hard to focus on an event. But no, I think he does like this event a lot. And I guess 200-1 is maybe worth the
$5 on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Might get lucky.
Maybe. We'll see. I mean, we'll see.
He's grinding. You got to respect the grind. He doesn't take any shots off. Yeah. Give him that.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, it's fun. We're getting closer to the second major, men's major of the year, the PGA Championship. That'll be coming up soon. We've got a couple more weeks to that, but this is obviously a big week on the calendar as well. We want to thank Abraham Answer for joining us once again. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Liam Byrne. And thank you for listening. Please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review, whether it's about, you know, CP's hangovers or whatever. We'll take whatever. So thanks again for listening. Please check back next week when we'll have some more, hopefully, winning picks for you.